from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
You know, the Bruins have been trying to get younger. They've had to for cap reasons, but they've also, for a long time, we weren't seeing a lot of openings for young players. And to their credit, they really came in and took those spots. Like Fabian Lysell has yet to do it, but Matt Patra came out of camp last year and he did it. And he took the spot. We know about the injury. And as soon as Mason Lorai came up for the second time, it seemed like he wasn't given that spot away. So, you know, it's partially credit to young guys running with the opportunities and showing that they are ready for the NHL. But in general, the Bruins needed younger players last year with lower cap hits. And now that's kind of what their team is. It's a younger team.
Well, and as I wrote, naturally they were going to get younger with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci retiring. Like, you're always going to get younger after that. But even going into last season, they were still middle of the pack in terms of age, because they tried to fill some openings with openings both on the roster and in terms of leadership by bringing in some other veterans like Kevin Shattenkirk, James Van Riemsdyk, Milan Lucic going into the year. Obviously, that didn't work. They tried it again with Pat Maroon at the deadline. So there was still an effort to have more of a veteran presence. And this year, we're not seeing that. Like, again, Shattenkirk and Van Riemsdyk still free agents. I guess you can't 100% close that door, but most likely both gone. Maroon, we know, is gone. And then the guys that they signed, Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov are 29. They're in their primes. They're not in their 30s. You know, Max Jones, Kastelic, these are guys in their mid-20s. What's amazing is there's only one player on this team in his mid-30s, and that's Marchand at 36, going on 37 once you get into the season. Charlie Coyle's 32. No one else is 31 or older. Like, Hampus Lindholm and I think Jonas Korpisalo are 30, and everyone else is under 30. Like, it's like that really, you know, happened pretty quickly. And what's really impressive about it, and where I think even Don Sweeney's harshest critics have to give him some credit, is you've gotten younger. You've basically, in the last 2 years, your average age has come down almost 2 years, from nearly 29 years old 2 years ago to like a little over 27 years old now. You haven't taken a huge step back in the standings. There hasn't been some huge reset. You didn't miss the playoffs. You weren't even in danger of missing the playoffs. And now you know, we all think they've at least gotten stronger in terms of like a more playoff ready team. And to do that while getting younger is like, that's some nice GM work. And no matter what you think of Sweeney, like, you got to give him some credit there.
Well, so let's talk about Don Sweeney, Scott, because piggybacking off of this, the Bruins lost to the Florida Panthers in April of 2023 after having the best regular season in league history. So that was, what, 15 months ago? There's 17 players that were on that Boston Bruins team that are no longer a Boston Bruin. Now, some of those players were, Craig Smith, for example, was shipped out before the at the trade deadline. Mike Riley was down in Providence for most of that year. And then other players like Orloff and Hathaway and Bertuzzi, you know, they were trade deadline acquisitions, so they weren't there the whole time. But the point I'm trying to make is that there was a lot of turnover. There's been a lot of turnover on the Bruins in the last 15 months. Yes, you lose Krejci and Bergeron, namely, but you also lost Taylor Hall, which was a big loss in the top six. Tyler Bertuzzi was a guy that they probably would have liked to have kept if things worked out. And there were holes that had to be filled. Linus Ullmark now is no longer a Bruin. We're yet to see the Bruins without him, obviously. But my point is, it's not that long ago that all these players were wearing the spoke to be. They've been gone since, and the Bruins were able to finish with a top, what, five record in the league? Top 10, obviously, certainly, and win a playoff round. And now add in your article, Scott, about them being the heaviest team and the youngest team, and they're entering next season on paper, in my opinion, a contender, a top 10 team in the league. And so, Scott, you mentioned when I quote tweeted your article, and I kept getting notifications every five minutes, it felt like, because you were going at it with people about somehow, some way Don Sweeney got roped into it, and you were defending the wall for him. What are people saying? Because you say that even his harshest critics should be complimentary of him, but it seems as though that there are those still out there that that think Don's been a complacent GM that's made moves here and there and like waving the hand over here, but it's not that impressive. And he's been conservative, trying to save his job. What was the rhetoric that you were going at it with people about?
So from what I could tell is like that the criticism I was responding to was people who still seem to think they should have been like selling off pieces last year, like at least the pending free agents. So like they should have traded Ullmark a year earlier if they knew they were going to do it eventually anyways. They should have gotten something for DeBrusk if they weren't going to re-sign him. They should have found a way to trade away Grizzlick. And it's like, I think those people's thinking, if I'm trying to like get into their heads, is they were never going to win the cup last year. So they should have tried to do a better job stockpiling assets, moving pieces that weren't part of the long-term future, which I get and I think is fair to an extent. I just think their approach was they were trying to win last year, and going into the season, I thought that was maybe a little too lofty, but they won a round and they were in the final eight, and you end up taking the eventual cup champs to six games. And like, to me, if you're that close, you go for it. Like that's just how I think is, if you're one of the eight best teams in the league, and they were all season, they had won the best records all season, you're in it. And like, you make moves to give yourself a shot. And if that means hanging on to pending free agents instead of trading them away at the deadline, then so be it. Like, consider them rentals if you want. Do whatever mental gymnastics you have to do, but you try to win. Like, even if you're not the favorite or one of the top four favorites, like, you're close enough that, to me, you try to win. I hate the idea of selling off pieces when you have like the fourth best record in the NHL. Like, I will almost never be on board with that strategy.
Also, they did try to trade Ullmark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. That's true.
That's true. Look, I think it's very easy to play the coulda, shoulda, woulda game, especially when it comes to GMs. And yes, there are a couple of GMs in the NHL that have been very successful. Tampa Bay has been a very successful team. The Blackhawks had a bit of a dynasty. The Kings obviously were successful. Vegas has had a bit of a run here, and they've had some aggressive moves. I understand that. I think what it all comes back to is the Bruins had Bergeron and Krejci as your top two centers for nearly two decades, and they didn't have to worry about those positions. And I think there are people out there who say that the Bruins should have gone all in more in Bergeron and Krejci's career. I feel like that's a conversation for a different podcast, because I feel like there's been, you know, five or six Bruins teams in the last 15 years that I think should have won a Stanley Cup, maybe more.
Brian, did your mic break?
No, I just didn't feel like leaning forward anymore.
I just started laughing because I was like, he's holding the mic so close to his face right now. It's like, He's like Taylor Swift. He's like up there singing.
Is it still related to Brian's tennis back injury?
So I was 4 to 6 for that. And I actually had a recovery time 2 weeks ahead of schedule. I was up for 2 weeks and I'm back to 100% now. So it's great. But let me try to get back to where I was going. I think it's, if you want to sit here and say that the Bruins didn't go all in enough over Krejci and Bergeron's careers, that's probably a conversation for another time. I don't really want to get into that right now. But at the end of the day, I think the fairest criticism is like, why did the Bruins have nobody in the system or any adequate replacements in the queue for when those guys eventually retired? Because they were here for so long, you had so much time to prepare for it. But again, okay, that's easier said than done because they were never drafting high enough. So yeah, those guys finally retire at the end of the 2023 season. And with no money, with no cap space, because you're paying their bonus overages, Don Sweeney was able to go out and patch together a Moneyball Bruins team last year. And look, I didn't think the Bruins were going to win the cup last year. I said that the entire time. They didn't have the horses up front, especially at center ice. But to Scott's point, it's like everybody has a boss to answer to. And if you're Don Sweeney, you're answering to Kim Neely. If you're Kim Neely, you're answering to the Jacobs. It's like when you have that record, you know, you can't sell pieces, because at the end of the day, you never know in sports. And I just feel like when Don Sweeney had no cap space to go out after he lost all those players after the 23 season, including some high end positions, and he moneyballs together a roster that wins a playoff series. And then heading into this year, he makes the free agency additions he had to make, and the team's looking like they're in a good place going into next year to compete for a Stanley Cup. Yeah, there's things to complain about here and there, but I just feel like it's not really fair to Sweeney to sit here and to blame him, because I feel like he's done a pretty damn good job and he's had his faults, but no GM is really perfect, are they?
No, and I think this ties into what Scott's opening shift was, which is certain people are underestimating the moves that were made and the team that they have. I mean, when you look at the Bruins decor, to also tie it into their youth, like you look at it's a fast decor. I mean, it's Lindholm, McAvoy, Zadorov, Carlo, Lauri, Peak. That is a good mix of guys that have been there, done that, but are still in their prime. And guys like Lauri and Weatherspoon, who are young. And maybe people are underestimating the team because they're young. Cause I mean, I understand sometimes being youthful isn't a good thing. Like sometimes that means that you're missing veterans and you're missing people that can lead you along the way, or, you know, you want to maybe be a few guys, like not have to fill in a second line spot with someone like Fabian Lysell, who's never been in the NHL before. But I think that all three of us agree that for the most part, the fact that they're younger is a good thing. I don't know if you guys have any concern about how young they are. I mean, I guess if you're stuck putting a younger guy in a position they're not ready for, you're maybe in trouble. But it doesn't look like they have to do that, because if Lysell isn't ready, he just won't be up.
Right. And like they can plug that second line spot enough to hold them over to the deadline, where like, you know, Trent Frederick or Morgan Geeky, they might not produce as much as you want someone in that role to, but they're not going to be overwhelmed by getting top 6 minutes. Like, both of them did it last year at times. So, you're right. You don't have to do, like, you don't have to force anyone into a bigger role than they're ready for. Even Laura on the back end, like, I think he could have been ready for top 4 minutes right from the get-go this year, based on how he finished in the playoffs. But now, by signing Zadorov, you don't need to do that with him. You know, if he needs a little more time and he needs to play third pairing minutes for a bit to get into the flow of the season, you can do that just fine. Like, that, perfect. One other thing I was going to say, because Brian, you sort of reminded me of this. One of the other criticisms I was responding to, someone's saying like Sweeney hasn't been able to pull off like the big blockbuster like Vegas did for Eichel and Florida did for Tkachuk, which were obviously huge parts of these last two Stanley Cup winners. And it's like, okay, if that's a criticism, then sure, I guess. But literally 2 out of 32 general managers have made those trades. And at the time Eichel got traded, you still had at least a couple years of Bergeron left. It was risky because he was having a neck surgery that had never been done on an NHL player. And you probably didn't really have the assets that Vegas did. Now, Vegas obviously won that trade, like, going away. But at the time, you know, it was Alex Tuch, good young player who had already produced in the NHL. Peyton Krebs was a top prospect who still has not totally panned out yet. And then there's like at least one first round pick in there. So like that was a lot at the time. Matthew Tkachuk, you would have had to trade Pastrnak or McAvoy. So if you said at the time that you would have done that and you think the Bruins would be in a better position now, okay, fine. You can stick to it. I know I was saying I would not have done that at the time. Like I would not have traded Pastrnak or McAvoy for Matthew Tkachuk at that time. And maybe I should have, maybe Tkachuk would do here what he's done in Florida and you'd be the cup champions. But, you know, I can't sit here and second guess something that in real time I was saying I wouldn't have done.
Yeah. And Don Sweeney has been the GM of the Bruins for almost a decade at this point. So there's so many individual moves or lack thereof to that you could nitpick. But in general, if you look at his trade deadlines as a Bruins GM, right? His first year as GM, the Bruins had a bridge roster, so I don't think anybody wanted them to go all in because I think their big move was Drew Stafford. And it's like, and I think everybody was okay with that because like that team had a ceiling. We all knew it.
Was that also the Lee Stepniak year?
I think that may have been the year following. Actually, okay. Stepniak did have two stints in Boston. No, people forget the second one. So Sweeney's second year, the Bruins did have a good team. It was 17-18. It was the year that McAvoy, DeBrusk, Danton Heinen, and Matt Grizzlick burst onto the scene. Brandon Carlo, I think it was his second full season. And at that deadline, the Bruins went out and got Rick Nash. Now, at the time, Rick Nash, yeah, he was on the backside of his career and clearly never played again following that season due to concussion issues, but he was a big name. He was a big name and certainly slid on that second line with Krejci and DeBrusk. And to have that as your second line with the Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak line, that was a damn good top six. Now, Tampa Bay won that deadline by getting Ryan McDonagh and I believe JT Miller from New York. And it felt at the time like Rick Nash was kind of a consolation prize. So if you want to say he lost that deadline to Tampa Bay, who ended up beating you that year, go for it. But the following year, you bring in Charlie Coyle and Johansson.
Yeah.
And like that was huge. You that third line was massive, got you to game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And they were a huge part in that run. So it's tough to criticize that year, even though I know that their second line had Carson Kuhlman / David Backes, and that was not ideal. So, and the 1920 season, you get Richie and Kasha, didn't turn out too well. Then you get Taylor Hall the following year, and then 22-23, they did go quote-unquote all-in. So if you want to sit here and criticize that Don Sweeney didn't go all-in enough, or at least outbid other GMs along the way, again, it's subjective. You can have that claim. I just think it's, you know, to say he's not been a good GM for the Bruins overall, I just think is a little bit unfair. And yeah.
And then Scott will argue with you on Twitter about it. If you're wrong, he will. And
I will say that was actually, like, by Twitter standards, that was incredibly civil. Like, I don't have it up, so I forget the exact accounts it was. If they're listening, thank you for, like, actually debating like a normal person and not after, like, the second tweet just calling me, like, you know, a dumbass or something much worse than that. So
yeah.
And by the way, for fans, if fans want to see what life would have been like if Don Sweeney hit in the 2015 draft and selected Jake DeBrusk and Brock Besser, now you can find out by watching Vancouver Canucks games. It just took about 8 years to figure it out. So the coulda, woulda, shoulda game, we can see if that pans out in the Pacific Northwest there.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.